On this week's show, Eva Gaspar of Abbey Light Studios blesses us with her presence to talk about Cursed Castilla EX, which is a bet that I lost, and is also out right now on Nintendo Switch. Speaking of the Switch, Nintendo's 2019 lineup apparently has one delightful surprise that we should all be looking forward to. And finally, the Hype Zone checks us into the infirmary. Pills, please. This is Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 84. Everybody, and welcome to the Nintendo Dual Screens, episode 84, for the week of February 4th, 2019. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, is the other screen in Dual Screens. He is also my best friend. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
You are so high energy right now. It's too much for me. It's too much.
I'm feeling
gonna
it.
Bring today. It down. You're like at a 10, bring it down to like a 5.
I'm feeling it today. We had a good pre-show. We had a good conversation with Eva before we started. I'm feeling good about where we are in life. It is a beautiful day here in New York City. The birds are chirping. The sun is out. The cats are sunbathing. The children are out in the park running around like crazy. It's a great day to be alive. And the third voice that you heard give a little chuckle before is Eva Gaspar of Abbey Light Studios. How are you, Eva?
Hi. Fine. Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. It is our pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Since you are new around here, I am going to tell you and our new listeners, which hopefully we have plenty of this week. For those of you that are new here to the Nintendo Dual Screens podcast, this is a show where Andy and I and a guest go over the Nintendo news that you absolutely need to know about, and we have an open discussion about Nintendo's past, present, and future. Nintendo Dual Screens posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including iHeartRadio and Spotify. And remember, you can support this show not only by listening, not only by reviewing, not only by checking out our Facebook group, our Twitter, and all that stuff, but you could support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers. Easy for me to say, Andy. Only been doing this for 84 weeks. Alex Gonzalez and Gavin, how do you say your last name, Andy?
Macrin? That's Macrin, I imagine.
Macrin. Gavin Macrin. Thank you. So to new producer. Thank you, guys. We cannot continue to grow and evolve without your support. Remember, every dollar helps. If you want to be a part of the show, you can email us your questions, comments, and concerns. That's the word I'm looking for. To feedback@ndspodcast.com. Before we get into our lead story, which is all about Cursed Castilla, which is going to take me about another 20 minutes to get used to saying because I've been calling it Cursed Castilla for the last week and a half. Before we get into that and the Nintendo News Report, I want to know, Andy, what should we be playing?
Well, I was going to say originally, You should be playing Wargroove.
Yes.
Because it's like, here's a sales pitch. Advance Wars? Question mark? That's sure. The whole sales pitch for Wargroove.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun, but there's another game that I sort of fell in love with this week.
Oh, boy. Surprise love affair.
Yeah, it's actually a port of a mobile game.
Okay.
It was super cheap. I think it was $3 on the eShop,
ooh,
if I'm not mistaken. It's a game called Downwell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know Downwell very well. It was on the Vita for a while, or, you know, is currently still. But yes, I remember.
On the
game.
What?
On the Vita.
So what's a Vita?
The PlayStation Vita. About. It is a pocket device.
Not familiar at all.
Made by Sony. It's pretty
so
much
Downwell
the
is a game.
Before the Switch. Yeah, Downwell. Yeah, good. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you got to listen. You're a little tiny pixel guy who jumps in a well, and he's got these awesome things called gun boots.
Sure.
And it's pretty easy. You can jump and shoot from your boots. You just fall downward.
Boot shoot.
Down the well.
Love it.
And your ammo gets replenished and you land on a solid surface.
Yes, indeed.
And you get these awesome power-ups along the way. You can like increase your life, or you can have your shells cause damage, or when you jump on the enemy, an explosion occurs. You get jetpacks, double jumps. It's hard as shit, but I love the arcade feel of it.
Sure.
My one thing is it's that arcade kind of gimmick that makes me feel that it's a time-based game. So I'm trying to speed run.
Yeah, and no, I always you don't fuck up. Do that. You don't want to do that.
But I'm like, oh, there's no timer. I can actually, you know, be careful. But it's something in the memory of my hands. I just want to go fast. Like go down fast, shoot, jump, ricochet. No, I gotta like calm down a little bit, the more temperate approach. But just the design has it makes me feel like I'm playing Sonic vertically.
So you and I discussed in the pre-show, we were yelling at each other because I'm playing three games that are for review right now, and I can't really give impressions of any of them, but I will tell you the three games that I'm playing for review. Okay, two of the reviews will be out later this week. The embargo is up on Friday, so that's these are games that have been on Steam for a while. So if you want to check them out yourself before they come out on Switch, you're more than welcome to. But one of them is Odalis, The Dark Call, and the other one is Oniken. I think they came out in like 2015. Maybe on Steam and other systems, but they're finally coming over to the Switch and trying to make a home for themselves there. And the biggest one, which I have to go a whole month without saying anything that I think about the game, is Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove. And I finally got my review code, so I will be burying my face in that. So you're probably not going to have a what you should be playing from me, because I'm going to be playing the shit out of that game for a while. While I'm preparing a review for that for the end of the month. Eva, let's hear what you've been playing. What should people be playing? Is there anything that you're playing these days on Switch or otherwise that people should be playing?
Well, I would recommend Super Hydora on iOS. or in Switch actually. But Super Hydora on iOS is, I guess, yeah, even more affordable if anything can be. And it is one of the greatest adaptations that we've done of the game. And it's like a small jewel, because I know it's hard to sell premium in mobile.
Sure.
But this one, it's totally worth it. Maybe your listeners, you know, will want to pick it up. Otherwise, it's also in the Switch. It's also on the eShop. And I believe we kept the easy mode, so to speak, so the rookie mode. Because these games are super complicated, super hard to play through. So it's always good for people that are not as able, I don't know how to say it, like me. I always get killed on the first screen. So to me, it was amazing to actually do the adaptation to iOS first, because we did it before Switch.
Sure.
And it was awesome because for the first time I could see more than the first screen, you know, and some screenshots and some instances of the game from the trailer. I could actually play the game whole, and it was very rewarding. And finally I understood all the depth of the praise, you know, of that game.
So yeah, and I'm sure
that would be my recommendation.
And I'm sure the buttons help a lot too. I mean, just playing a game like that. And for those who don't know, it's basically a shoot 'em up, arcadey style shoot 'em up game. You're spaceship and you're killing aliens and whatnot. Beautiful sprite work. But I will say that if you are looking it up, it sits. It's at, I think, a 9 out of 10 on Steam reviewed.
Yeah.
And iOS, it's like a 4.8 out of 5. So it's doing well. Yeah, for sure.
And it has also Metacritic for the iOS version, which is very rare.
Mm.
Because iOS games don't get rated, or they don't get Metacritic.
Right.
And I think the Metacritic is 82.
Well, you know, most iOS games aren't that refined or polished or fun to play. Super High Dora.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Very, very then, true.
Yeah. So I would recommend that. But you know, in the Switch, if you get it in the Switch, you can play two. You know, you can play it co-op.
Oh, Steven, we should totally stream that.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'll send you a code.
Sweet. Oh. Look at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at that. Pays to know people around here.
Things are happening already, and the show hasn't even started yet.
All right. Let's get into the releases of the week. Let's let the people know what's coming out this week if they haven't been swayed by the two of your glowing recommendations. All right. So this is going to be from the 4th through the 10th. So we do have quite a few games coming out. So let's see if we can pick some good ones here.
I actually took the liberty of just going through these things, and I already picked what's worth playing next week.
Awesome.
You know, so it's easier for us and our listeners. Let's start out with Evoland Legendary Edition.
Mm.
This is a compilation of Evoland 1 and 2. Now, this game came out a while ago on Steam. It's essentially, it takes the character on a journey through RPG, through 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit era. So you start off as a sprite, then a more detailed sprite,
sure,
and then you're a 3D polygon model. So you go from like a Legend of Zelda over the top viewpoint,
okay,
and then it ends up being more like a Final Fantasy 7 kind of gameplay. Yeah, so it's really neat how they do that.
Okay,
so it's super, super nostalgia trip, and having both games in one package for $20 is mwah, beautiful. What's also beautiful is Observer,
mm-hmm,
out this week too. That's from the makers of Layers of Fear, one of my favorite horror games in recent memory. I would jump on that bad boy if you like puzzle, atmospheric, creepy, first-person horror games. There's also...
Oh boy, here we go.
One of our hypiest games of 2019.
Get hype!
And that is Monster Cross Energy Supercross, the official video game 2.
Uh-huh.
That was one of our hype games of the year.
Monster Energy Supercross, baby. Woo! Right. Get on those motorbikes.
At the affordable price of $59.99, how could you resist that price tag?
Get that monster money.
Eve was like, what?
Yeah, $60.
But it's the sequel to an official video game, so you know it's legit.
Damn right.
And we also have the aforementioned Odalis and Oniken coming out this week as well.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want you did skip it, but what looks really interesting to me is a game called Solstice Chronicles, MIA. I don't know if you've played it or if you know anybody that has, but that looks pretty interesting. It looks like one of those top-down or twin-stick shooter types. I don't know. It looks pretty cool. I thought
you were going to mention Avenger Bird for a second.
Well... there's a lot of birds. There's a lot of birds coming out this
Steven,
week.
Steven, this game has... Let me tell you this game's description, right?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. This is a platform side-scroller game with pixel art graphics.
Uh-huh.
But your hero isn't just a regular hero.
No.
So you're thinking, whoa, what can this bird do?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what he can do. You are playing a bird that can flap its tiny wings to fly and glide for a limited distance.
I don't even know where you're getting this from, because I don't just even see this game.
Oh, it's on it's on the list.
I see the King's Bird.
It's out on the 5th, Avenger Bird, for a whopping $2.30.
Oh, there it is. Okay, so we got Avenger Bird and we have the King's Bird.
Also, there's a reason why I kind of want to buy this game, because in the little features where it says... there's an epic boss fight at the end. Like,
sure.
Yay, boss fights are features.
Yeah.
It says Easter eggs and unexpected cameos.
Right.
Who exactly is starring in this game as a cameo?
I mean,
what can we expect?
A dog, maybe?
Yeah, but it has to be someone of note. Like, who's.
Ooh, Avengers. It could be Captain America Bird. You never know.
It's Harvey Birdman. That's what it's going
to
be.
All right. Well, enough of that silliness. Let's move on. Let's get to the lead story.
To the lead story.
Eva, I want to get into this. I want to dig in deep. I want to get nice and dirty with this thing. So, Cursed Kestia EX came out I believe in 2016, I want to say, on Steam. At least that's what my very base research has told me.
You know what, it's been so long that I would have to double check. It was either 16 or 17.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it is a ghouls and ghosts or ghosts and goblins inspired side-scrolling action game. Right off the bat, I mean, the comparisons are going to be pretty obvious because it has that look and that feel. It almost has very similar physics and enemy types and all that kind of thing. So I want to go right off the bat and I want to ask, do you know how the team came up with the, I don't want to say the idea, but why did they go down the route of making something that almost pays homage to those ghouls and ghosts, ghosts and goblins?
It's totally intentional, and it's perfectly normal that you feel like, oh my god, this is like it looks so familiar, because it is a homage to Ghouls and Ghosts and Ghouls and Goblins and these kind of games that of that period, and it's completely intentional. But the thing is that it's not a copy. It's not
right,
and that's the beauty of it. That it doesn't feel like, oh, you're playing that game. No, it reminds you. It's a fantastically well done work by Loco Malito and Gritor 87, an ode to these kind of games, to these games. But you are playing Cursed Kestia, and you realize it. You know, it doesn't take too long to realize that. Oh, you don't have to shoot to the tombstones, because no, there's not gonna pop out a bonus as it happened in the original game, because it's not that game. It's Cursed Kestia, and it wants you to take you there, but now. So, yeah, that's
What I imagine happened was somebody was sitting down and as a kid and was playing. Ghouls and Ghosts or whatever, was playing this game, and they were just writing notes saying, I hate this, okay. I want to change, why didn't they do this, why didn't they change that, why didn't,
and then
they grew up and they were like, I can make it better. I know what will make this game better. We're going to make it more fun, and we're going to introduce mechanics that are quality of life improvements, and we're going to make kids not want to throw their controllers through their televisions.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. Yeah, I agree. Yes, it does. Eventually. But actually, so the direct inspiration for doing Cursed Kestia was they were actually on holidays. They were, so Loco Malito and Gritor 87, they are friends, and they were traveling with their families, and they were visiting. Yeah, I'm really bad with names and places and stuff. So they were visiting a castle, right? And then they started to talk about, look at this castle, look at this, look at that. And they started getting the idea and the connection to how Ghouls and Ghosts was for them. That's how the idea began. But that was not the first collaboration. Of them too. They already been working for a while when they started working on Cursed Kestia. The first game where this story, what you just explained about, you know, a kid writing notes and thinking, how can I do my own version? That would be Super Hydora, actually.
Sure.
And we've put some information about it. We did what was it? A blog?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's in Adelaide's web or we just did it I forgot the name. But we did a blog and we share some images of those notebooks with you know, where Loco Malito was drawing as a kid Super Hydora already. So So yeah.
See that? I was half right.
Yeah. Yeah. So he does take a lot from his childhood and what video games meant for him and going to the arcades meant for him to develop and create games today. He takes a lot from that.
Right. Before I kick it over to Andy, one of the things that I take away from this new generation of games that pay homage to the generations that they played growing up as kids is that when we were growing up playing games as kids, a lot of games came from arcades and were ported or remade or the genre kind of moved over to the consoles, but it still kept that crushing difficulty of the arcades because the arcades' main goal was to get you to spend more money. So, mm-hmm. you know, quicker deaths meant more quarters, which meant more money for the establishment and the publisher and all that stuff. So, but what's nice to see is that as we're moving on and these games are coming out a little bit more, the difficulty's still there, but it's in a different way. It feels less cheap. It feels like the design of the game, a very simple design change in Curse Castilla that I absolutely adored was the fact that you have a choice which weapon you pick up. And just being able to do that when you in the games that it's paying homage to, when you pick up a weapon, it takes over whatever weapon you had, and it could be worse than the weapon that you're using, and that kind of sucks. But at the end of the day, you kind of have to suck it up and just move on. But in Curse Castilla, it's a simple adjustment, but it scrolls through the different weapon types, and you could pick the one that you either think that that's going to be useful for that level, or you pick something you're comfortable with, or you could avoid it altogether. And it's simple things like that we're seeing in these retro inspired games that are coming out, especially on this show. And Andy, you could speak to this too, because we cover a lot of indie developers, and a lot of indie developers are inspired by what they played as children. You know, with their friends and family and everything like that. And it's really cool to see because it made me, and I stream retro games on Wednesdays, and I was playing the old Ninja Turtles arcade game on NES, and it is brutally difficult. Like, just, there's very few, life power-ups. All these things. But then when I played the third one never came to arcades. It was a NES made game, and you could see that the improvements, because they weren't trying to get more quarters out of you, you could see that the design philosophy changed. So I do want to tip my hat off to the dev team and making those decisions that, or being able to distinguish between difficulty because you need to kill the player to make more money, and difficulty as in challenging. Because while it's definitely challenging, you're throwing your controller for completely different reasons than back in 1988 and 89.
Yeah.
Andy?
Yeah, totally agree.
No, it's the same reasons. It's the same exact reasons. Yes, I just want to touch a little bit on Loco Malito, because, you know, when I first discovered him on the internet, I was just browsing some random Reddit forums one day for games that were like Castlevania. Because, you know, like a lot like Steven, we grew up in the 8-bit Nintendo era of video games. That's where a lot of our memories are close to our hearts when it comes to video games in general. And there's always a void for these like 8-bit retro games. At least it was for us, I would say, in the last 5 years. I think now more days you see a lot more retro pixel art games popping up, like Avenger Bird, which looks amazing. but I came across this game called The Curse of Isios, which is essentially, it's Castlevania meets Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, I'm Greek. I love Castlevania. Let's give this a shot. So I went to his website, and what do I find? So it's basically a love letter to every genre when I was a kid. He has a Castlevania game. He has his Gradius game. He even has like a 8-bit Doom-like game called 8-Bit Killer, which these are all on my PC, and they've been there for years. because I fell in love with these guys' game because it was essentially what I've been wanting for a long time to play. Now, the one thing about his games, which was great, is that they were all for free. Mm-hmm. He basically, it's a one-man team, and they're all free games. So I want to ask you, what was it like taking what was originally free content, and then now it's you're putting a price tag on it? Like, how does that transition work for you guys?
Yeah, what was that process like?
I mean, so there's several points of view. First, I wanted to say something about what Stephen said. Loco Malito has an extreme and very sophisticated detail for design, and that's why his games are so enjoyable. He spends years developing the original game, and then with First Castilla and Super Hydora, we've got 3 more years, professional years, developing further. So when you play Curse Castilla on the Switch, or you play Super Hydora on the Switch, is a game that's been worked on for over 6 years. First, as amateur, and then with a professional team. And that comes around with you, Andy. It's true. He develops his games as love letters, and he very freely, very generously puts it out there for free. But there's a difference of what you find when you find those games for free, or when you buy them on the console, or even on Steam. When you buy them, beyond giving your appreciation to the developer, as always, what you find is a professional video game. It's completely rounded. It has taken a professional team working on it, polishing what it means to have a game on a console. Because you can, of course, the basis is there from the beginning. That's why we want to put the work and turn them into a commercial product. And that's from the development point of view. We started working in this collaboration with Loco Malito and Grito 87, I want to say beginning of 2016, but and we launched Curse Castilla for PC and Xbox, and 3 years later we launched it again for Switch. You take those, well, okay, now you cannot, because on PC we keep updating it, of course. So it's basically very close. But there's an evolution too, from when we first launched the game to now, to what we launch now. We keep working. And Loco Malito, depending on the platform, will work more closely or not necessarily, depending on how much adaptation it needs, or whether it's required his participation to do the adaptation. He's very involved, but you know, not at the professional level, right?
Sure.
So he has his daytime job. He loves to do video games, but he doesn't dare to go professional yet. You know, we'll see. And the other side is how is it to work with products that seem to have a free version? Well, it's not easy. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not about making millions, because people, there are some people that understand that paying for software means, you know, just giving a small contribution to all those years of work to the developers and publisher, because we're not Electronic Arts, right? We're a publisher, but we're very small, so it's not the same. But yeah, it's tough. It's not, I mean, if it was an unreleased game with this quality, I don't know what would happen. I honestly don't know, because we've worked with what I consider, or what we consider to be the biggest games, the more interesting to bring as console games. Not, you know, in the course of Easius, we get a lot of requests to publish it,
right,
and we might end up doing something, but it's a very short game. And if you would find it in a console, you would expect, when you find content in a console, you expect a certain amount of gameplay and depth. And for us, quality and you know, player satisfaction is very important. So we're thinking, what can we do? Because there's a lot of people that love these other smaller games of Loco Malito. But we have to think about, what does a console player want or expects when gets a game on a console? You know?
Right.
And that's
right.
Very important.
And yeah, and also, you guys, I don't want to cut you off, Steven, but
that's all right.
When you guys bring these freeware games to the console, like with Super Hydora and recently with Curse Castilla, It isn't just a straight port. Like, well, here's the original version that was free. Let's just port it here, put a price tag on it, and call it a day. It gives them a chance to reassess, okay, here is my original design. What can I add to this to make it better? Like with Castilla, with Curse Castilla, there was a whole level he added to the game from its original version.
I think three levels.
Oh, there you go. You won. Even better.
Yeah.
So if for you guys, I feel you're giving him a chance to, I guess, have the fullest potential of his vision. And I think that is worth the price tag, which is great, because it's you're
that,
taking
that you know. Comes across too, Andy. Like when you're playing a game with the idea that console gamers have certain expectations, and over the course of the last, I want to say maybe 3 years, those expectations or that line has kind of gotten blurred with games coming out early access and like all this other stuff, or like day and date here and there and constantly getting updated and all that stuff. Like that line is starting to get a little bit blurred as to what a console game is compared to a, you know, a PC or Steam or whatever freeware game. That line's starting to get blurred, but there are still those expectations. When I pick up my Switch, I'm still looking for, I'm still expecting a level of quality when I download any game, even if they are the worst of what's on that console. I'm still expecting some level of polish and you know, some sort of high level of quality. And and it seems like that was the goal here of Abbey Light Studios, is to take something that is still of good quality. It's got excellent bones, but it's a passion project. It's something that somebody did that's not trying to make money. But now you're taking that product and you're saying, okay, well, there's
it has value. Yeah.
Right. It has value. Yeah. There's a lot of potential in this thing. So we're going to take this thing. We're going to, it's almost like when you're in an art class and you do like a painting, like you're all painting like the same thing and you're painting, and it's a beautiful painting. You're super proud of it. And then the teacher comes around and goes, you know what, if you make this change, if you do this, if you shade with this, if you use this color and you just kind of, you know, give this a little depth, and now all of a sudden you have something that is, it's the same painting, but it's a little bit more higher quality. And now you could sell it to, you know, to people, to art connoisseurs and whatnot, which is what Andy and I are. We are high snooting art connoisseurs of the Nintendo Switch. Ain't that right, Andy?
Oh, that's what we are for sure. Definitely what we aspire to be.
Indeed.
What I keep telling myself that I am every morning when
Andy,
I wake up.
What did you think of the music? Because I was actually kind of... something in my brain broke when I was... Because it's... To me, it has Super Nintendo, like, feel. But the sound sounded like a Genesis. Did you... Or Sega Master System / Sega Genesis. Did you have that same...
Yeah, it's feeling? Hard to reconcile those two things when they're like,
it's like my brain is trained to hear like, certain sounds.
What's going on? But again, just to like Eva's point, this game isn't trying to be something. It's not. It's the inspiration is evident, but it's its own entity at the end of the day. And this is just two people. It's one guy on the sprites, the artwork, the and then there's a sound guy.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. And then, well, so Greater 87 is the musician. And because because it takes so long, and he, so Locomalito tests the design again and again and requests and shares and gets feedback. Greater 87 also participates in giving feedback. I mean, for Curse Castilla, definitely he was also part of the conception of the game and what would be about and everything, right? Mm-hmm. It is Locomalito, the one that does the artwork, that does the original programming, that does the continuous design and redesign, and is the lead developer, basically. But Greater 87 adds this unmistakable, fantastic, original soundtrack that is so, is new, but you have the feeling that you've heard it before. So familiar, you know, it's like it has its own identity, but it is connecting with you at some levels that, well, I cannot even, I mean, don't get me to talk about chips and stuff. I think we could also a blog post about the chips, because he used the original chips to do the music to sound exactly, or he even constructed, a pianola or something like that, a 15th century pianola to get the exact. So, I mean, I don't know. All this stuff it's a step too far for me. But I know it's here, the love and the attention to detail. But I cannot explain exactly the chips and stuff that he uses. But it's an amazing work. It's both of them are exceptionally on their areas. It's just that it's just one main, and then Grifter, that it's like like El Quixote and Sancho Panza.
Oh my God, yes. Well, I imagine the one thing you could kind of speak to is you can, I think, when the show first began, Steven mentioned losing something, maybe. And that was, we had a little bit of a debate, because I can't let it go.
Losing something? Listen.
No, my God. You're going to set the stage incorrectly.
No, I'm going to set it properly.
Your recollection is flawed.
We were discussing having you on for this week's show, and Steven kept pronouncing the name of the game Cursed Castilla.
Incorrect. See, you're already telling the story incorrect.
Doesn't matter. You still pronounced it wrong.
No, I said it both ways. I said it both ways, and I said, you know what? I think it might be Castilla, because I keep I was watching a couple of videos of video reviews of the game, and two of the three called it Castilla.
Castilla. That was after the one Steven.
No, you're wrong.
Do not revise history.
It was during the conversation. I was going back and listening to it, and then I would come back and say, no, this person said Castilla, so I'm going with Castilla. And the only person that called it Castilla was, I think, German or Swedish or something like that. So I was like, well, they don't know English. So
all right. In any case.
Yes, they do.
In any case. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Eva. In any case, the main point here was that after a very long duel, see what I did there?
Yeah, right.
Steven was set firmly in the Castilla pronunciation column.
Yes.
I told him, listen, you white man, it's Castilla. It's a Spanish word. It cannot
but
you were very adamant.
Yes, because so my thought process was, yes, it's a Spanish word, but a lot of foreign creators like to dumb down the words for Americans. So I thought maybe for the American release, they would change it to Castilla and market it as Castilla, because we're stupid people.
Right.
That's all.
But Steven, the issue there is...
We're 27th in education for a reason, Andy.
Issue with your logic is the original name for this game was not Cursed Castilla. Uh-huh. The word cursed is a translation of the original title, which we can have Eva go into. And also, before you go on, just confirm the pronunciation of the name of the game.
So actually, that part has always been the same, which is Castilla.
Yes.
But that's it's true, that's a Spanish pronunciation. So Castilla, right?
Right.
Originally, the game is called Maldita Castilla. And when we picked it up, we wanted, well, we decided to add an EX, extended, right? Maldita Castilla extended version. And then we would undertitle it localized, right? And that would mean to call it Cursed Castile, because that's the name of the region, because it's a kingdom in Spain. Castilla is a region in, a kingdom in Spain. And in English, it's called Castile. And then in French and in German, I think it was, I forgot the first one. I forgot, but it was Castilian or something like that. But that created a lot more confusion than anything else, because Castilla sounds very familiar to Castillo. And there's some people in the United States that know some Spanish, and they think that, well, we might have gotten it wrong or something, and they change it and they say Cursed Castillo, and it's no, it's not Castillo, it's a Castilla. So it was a lot of confusion. There are even outtakes of presenters or journalists talking about the game and having trouble pronouncing the game, and we were like, okay, we have to fix this as much as possible to make everybody's lives better. And we decided to, okay, let's lose the undertitle and let's just have one title. That would be Cursed Castilla, which is one word in English that everybody can understand, and then Castilla, which is a region of Spain, and let's have it at that.
It's a lot of controversy.
It's completely normal. It causes some issues because it's the double L that has this.
Gets you every time, Andy.
No, it did not get me though. That's the point. There's this whole conversation. I was.
All right, Andy. Before we move on, is there anything else you want to talk about?
I'm just wondering. Like, is there anything else in the Loco Malditos library you guys are maybe considering bringing to Switch next?
Oh, the Switch.
Or anywhere else for them, or Steam, Switch, PS4, or Xbox One, you name it. Just anything from his back catalog that's coming in the pipeline.
We're not yet working on it. We've talked about it, even with him, we've talked with Loco Malito and Grito. But, he's already working on his next big game. Which is Star Guardian. He has very little time to develop, and he wants to keep his processes as they were before. So I cannot tell you when that will happen. So in the meantime, once we finish a couple things that we are doing right now, we're getting dirty with some more games of his back catalog.
Nice.
But probably not this year for Switch, sadly. Maybe a bit later. First, we want to see, probably iOS is going to be the first platform, because they are smaller games, so that might make him easier to adapt for mobile audiences than, putting them up for console or PC. Maybe later on as a bundle or something like that, I don't know. We'll see. Thinking is great.
Sweet. All right. That is going to do it for our lead story about Cursed Castilla EX Extended. That's what that means.
You got it right. You got it right.
I heard it here first, folks. So let's go right into the Nintendo News Report. It's a short Nintendo News Report. We have two items on our list this week. And to start us off, well, there's some rumors about an updated Switch in which a lot of people were saying wasn't going to happen. Nintendo said wouldn't happen. And now there's rumors that, well, that may have been a lie. Andy, take it from here.
Thank you, Steven. So we had this whole debate not too long ago about a potential Switch successor or a next iteration of the Switch or a Switch upgrade, perhaps. So the according to a Japanese publication named Nikkei, and this comes from NintendoEverything.com. Thanks, guys, for all your great work. There are rumors of a smaller version of the Switch in the works, and it may come out early this year. I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, definitely an interesting take on things. So I want to go to our Twitter poll, because we did put up a poll when this news broke. We put up a poll on Twitter that said, and this was for the opposite. This is for a Switch 2.0. Would you buy a Nintendo Switch 2.0, which has 1080p in handheld and remains 1080p docked as well, but at 60 frames when it's docked, a longer battery, a larger screen, so not smaller, increased memory and RAM, meaning more room for games and a little bit more RAM to run games a little bit better, and would you pay $349.99? And we had 61 votes, which is pretty damn good for one of our Twitter polls. 59% yes, they would buy it, and 41% said no. So maybe if these rumors are true, Nintendo might be onto something, because maybe there's not enough people who would want an upgraded, more beefy, more powerful Nintendo Switch.
Right, but a smaller Switch?
Well,
like, are we doing the whole Game Boy Micro route here?
I think we're
like
more
Nintendo got a Nintendo.
I think what they're probably, if this is true, what they're probably workshopping is the idea that the Switch that it is now is pretty delicate. It's not really meant for younger kids. It has a fan that you have to make sure you're not blocking, especially when you have it in standby mode. If you accidentally press those buttons, that system's going to turn on and that fan's going to go. And if it doesn't have proper ventilation, that thing could overheat. So that's number one. Your Joy-Con connections, or it could be a little wonky sometimes. You know, remember there was problems with it bending, like in people's pockets, like.
Yeah, but those were, I think, were exaggerated reports.
Sure,
I don't know.
It's possible. But
if you're putting a Switch in your back pocket, first of all, you're a moron. What's wrong with you?
Well, we've been putting Game Boys and 3DSs in our pockets for years.
Have you seen the Game Boy compared to a Switch? Yes, exactly.
Was that Eva? I'm sorry.
They,
I didn't catch that.
They had cover.
Right, exactly.
No, sorry. They were sturdier, and the DS, it was folded, so you could put it. That was the one that you could put it in your back pocket or your pocket. But and the Game Boy was like a brick. So
yes, literally.
You could put it wherever it fits, but well, the Switch is definitely more delicate.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it in a pocket.
No, I mean, I definitely wouldn't either. But the thing about Nintendo is that they look at themselves as a toy company, not a video game company. So they're making things for children, and children are the ones that you know, they're not the ones spending the money, but they're the ones using the product for the most part, at least from their research. So I think this kind of makes sense from what you thinking about their track record. They typically don't make things better. They make things easier, if that makes sense. They make things more convenient later on with it, with their iterations.
Yeah, like that first Nintendo 2DS, that was so convenient looking,
well,
and shaped.
You can't fault them for that. I mean, they had an age limit for kids who could use the 3D. It was like not recommended for kids under like 8 years old, and the hinges would always break on those damn things. So again, they made something that was a little sturdier and cheap. And I think that might be the route they're going for. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Vita-sized Switch. If this thing is real, that I wouldn't be surprised if they go that.
Steven, way. I'm gonna take it a step further. It's gonna be a PSP Go.
There you go.
Sized.
There you go. There you go.
But this is only half of the story, mind you.
Yes, it's only.
There is more. There is more to this tale.
This other part is the more
so
concerning.
Along with this claim of a smaller Switch in the works, This report also unveiled details of a updated Switch online service for this year. And I think we can all easily say this can mean one thing, and that's SNES games are going to be on the Switch online service. That's the most logical step that this could take.
All right. The data miners found that already.
Right. So now the question is this going to be at an added price? Is it a different bundle package? Is it just an add-on to the $20 a year? We don't know. But what we do know is Nintendo's online game is not very profitable for them right now. Sure. It seems kind of like meandering where it is. And even though it's the cheapest option among its competitors, it doesn't offer quite as much.
Yeah, it's weak as hell.
Yes, exactly. That's putting it very bluntly. But I think keeping it up with some more games from the SNES catalog, maybe even N64, just to kind of like spice it up a little bit, is a really good idea.
About just Game Boy. Like, go with Game Boy and Super Nintendo.
I would
first.
Do, yes. Those two would be perfect. Just get all the sprite eras out of the way. It really should have launched with NES, SNES, and Game Boy out the bat. That's what it should have done. Here's our this massive catalog of three consoles, and we'll just update them all along the way. But we're doing it piecemeal, which I can see like you're testing the waters, but Nintendo, given the virtual console, they're a bit iffy about giving their old stuff away for free. So I can see the hesitation on their end. But we want free shit. Make it worthwhile, Nintendo. Make it worthwhile. And if Smash sucks online, why am I paying for your service?
Exactly. Exactly. My God, is it horrible to play online? All right. So, and I do want to say that months ago when there were rumors or when we were trying to ponder how they can get other systems on here for the backwards compat, we both were saying that if they added each generation for like an extra $2, $3, $4 a month or a year rather, that would be one way that they could do it. And it looks like they might do that little model.
I would hate that model so much.
Yeah. Well,
man, they're gouging me.
Maybe, but, you know, it's better than spending $6 a game like we have the last four generations.
Could you imagine, quick side note, if this rumored PS5 is like fully backwards compatible, they charge you for each PlayStation library? Like, yeah. Here's your PS1 games, it's $5 extra. Here's your PS2 games, it's going to be $10 extra.
Yeah. Yeah, do it.
I do not want to go down that road.
Spend it. I'll spend the money.
No, you're wrong. Don't be that guy.
Why would you do that?
I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. I would definitely not do that. All right, the last bit of news here, Andy.
But things we definitely will be doing is buying Nintendo's first party games. Mm-hmm. So there's one game that Nintendo, this is a confirmed news bit, unlike our previous item. Nintendo has announced, again, this comes from NintendoEverything.com. Thank you so much, guys. That there is an unannounced title that's in the works for a 2019 release that fans would, quote unquote, be delighted to know about. So delight is the key word. Afternoon delight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this could be many, many things. You know, I don't want to go off the rails here and into like super speculation zone, but I think given the recent Metroid Prime 4 news, it's whole reshuffling, restructuring, reboot in a sense. Mm. This could very well be the Metroid Prime trilogy that everyone thinks is a definite thing. It's set. Right. It's already made. We just got to release the thing. So that's like my first guess for whatever this unannounced thing could be that would actually delight Nintendo fans.
Yeah,
it's delightful indeed. Yeah. This could also be that after this that Rare game that we mentioned last week's episode.
What the hell were they doing for the last three years besides Rare was porting doing Tropical something. Freeze?
As of 2015, there was some project they were working on. You know, Rare, again, you know, they've been doing stuff for Nintendo for a very long time.
New stuff.
And we've gone back and forth on them doing a potential Star Fox game. So that'd be fun.
Yeah,
to
do
see
it.
In the pop line.
Make it.
On the lesser probable side, I would think maybe Pikmin 4 has a fan. That's a really good.
The light would be a word to use.
Yeah, Fox. It's got a decent fan base. Pikmin. So a fourth game.
I want to know what Eva thinks. Franchise. Eva, what do you think this mystery game could be?
Anything, and they will be happy with whatever they announce. It's tough. I think that it would be for the Switch or for the new Switch.
Oh, this is the Switch.
The Switch. I guess the Fox is the one that has been on the talks for longer, right? And nothing has come recent, original, right?
You have to kind of think, like, they have a bunch of IP that are pretty dormant for quite a long time.
We haven't seen F-Zero in a long time. Could be F-Zero.
F-Zero we haven't seen in forever.
But I think we're overlooking one key IP here that's been dormant.
Don't say it.
It's not going to be... I'm not going to say Star Tropics.
No. I know what you're going to say.
I was going to say Mario's Motel, too.
No.
Was it Hotel or Motel? Because Motel sounds kind of shady.
Hotel.
It was Hotel, right?
Yeah.
Motel sounds... I mean,
that's a good sequel. Mario's Motel. It's like the hotel business failed.
He's on hard times.
It went tits up, and I was like, I gotta do a motel to make ends meet.
Yeah, but I guess it's going to come down to who is playing with the Switch, and I don't know the last quarter what they said, but the last information that I got is that the Switch is it's being played by adults, adults and adults with children, but a lot of adults that travel.
Yeah. That sounds like us, Steven.
That does sound like us.
I'm an adult, at least I think I am.
We barely qualify as adults.
And you're an adult. Less of an adult, and you have children, which is scary to me.
that is true.
But yeah, and then the mini Switch. We'll have to think, who are they going to target? Because the DS, originally, they targeted this same audience, adults, but then they realized that adults didn't care for that kind of machine. It wasn't practical, so they retargeted for kids. The Switch, from the get-go, it's being picked up by adults. They travel, and they when they are home, they can play with their kids. So it's fantastic for everyone, but mainly the one that makes the buy is the adult, and the adult is the one that also plays. And the mini Switch, it's going to happen if they can, find a right target for it. That's going to add something. Like, as you said before, the 2D.
The 2DS. Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. That was clearly for younger kids.
So they could be making something that's more targeted towards the kids. Who knows? Maybe it is a hand-in-hand thing.
Yeah, because they need to transition the 3DS.
Right, because that thing, if you look at this week's releases, we're getting one 3DS game. So those are going, like, you can see the support dwindling for the 3DS. And it's sick, it's kind of sad, but you want to push one as your primary. It's your home console and your going outside console too.
Could it be
either that, or you think who's going to be playing it?
Right.
Are they going to
something sturdy for the kids?
Yeah, are they going to target kids, adults, casual?
Sorry, you were saying?
No, go ahead. Go right ahead.
They also make a lot of profit of money or business out of the machines itself. So the 3DS has, I think that it has run its course. And now they need a new machine that it's going to be targeted to kids that don't have a phone, by the way, because if they have a phone, there's no point of having a console.
You know what, guys, I think having a phone is the perfect segue into the hype zone.
Oh baby, it's time to get hype. It's time to go into the hype zone, because it is getting It is getting touchy, baby. We are getting touchy here in the hype zone because it is time. Oh man, Andy, this is something. Nintendo never ceases to amaze us,
Steven,
with their touchy feely.
Steven.
Yes.
Steven, Eva, listen, yeah. You guys, I got a fever.
You can call us Steva if you want.
And the only prescription is Dr. Mario on iOS, Android this summer. Woo! As a free download with optional in-app purchases.
Look at
Get
that.
Those credit cards ready, in-app mom and daddy.
And nothing says kid-friendly more than in-app purchases for a Mario game, let alone a Dr. Mario game. By the way, anybody who has an Android phone has been playing Dr. Mario on some form of emulator for at least the last 8 years. So welcome to the club, Nintendo. But on top of that, I wonder, you know what I wonder? Andy, I wonder if they are paying attention to who's playing the Dr. Mario game on the NES Online or the Switch Online, because didn't they just recently add the what do they call it? The remix or whatever they're calling them, the updated version. Wasn't Dr. Mario one of those games that they updated for on Switch recently?
Yeah, if I recall correctly, me and Superfan Zach played the game on the first day of the online service launch.
Oh, baby.
And I kicked his ass.
Yeah, you did.
I kicked his booty.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. Well, guess what, Andy? It's hype time, because you're going to be able to play Dr. Mario, the classic pill-dropping, bug-killing Mario, who I, of course, say that it's Mario's cousin.
Who's also named Mario?
No, his name is Tony Mario. The last name
Tony
is
Mario.
You don't call a doctor by
who
his first
looks
name.
Exactly like Mario.
Have you seen Italians? We kind of do. I mean, you could tell my family, we're all related. Just joshing. But yeah, you know, this is it. You know, it's Dr. Mario, PhD. He's going to kill some bugs, and you're going to have to pay to do it.
First of all, you're missing a key feature here, a key aspect of this announcement.
Uh-huh.
This is Dr. Mario on a global scale, right. Dr. Mario World.
Right.
The official title.
Yeah.
This is huge.
He's what do you call it? Volunteering his time to work in villages. He's going to travel the world. He's going to administer vaccines, except in Portland, Oregon, which apparently they just don't want to do that. But he's going to go around and he's going to cure them diseases. He's going to do it.
Right. I just love how Nintendo has this announcement for this brand new, amazing Dr. Mario game for mobile devices.
Right.
Says that it's a free game with optional in-app purchases, but does not have any detail as to how those will work.
And
I love
never
that.
Do.
I love the mystery.
Do, Andy, whenever they announce one of these mobile games, they never tell you what's going on with this mobile game. They're like, hey, it's Mario Run on mobile. We'll tell you more in 3 months. Okay.
That's part of the beauty. That's part of the majesty of Nintendo's mobile game scene. I don't want to know what I'm paying for until the day I actually have the game in my hands.
Well, they're making a shit ton of money on mobile, so this is no surprise.
They really are. Yeah, that Dragalia Lost game is just making bank.
It is. Dragalia and that Fire
For a new
Emblem.
IP, that's actually making a lot of money.
Fire
so.
Emblem made them like $500 million. It's insane.
Yep. All right.
That's the hype zone. Yeah, half a billion. That's nothing to sneeze at. All right. So we're in the home stretch here because it's time to get into the Retro Game Club. So last week, Andy picked the dumbest game I think you could possibly pick. He picked NBA Hang Time, which David and I got a big old 0 points. So now
I told you it's the last time, first and last time I'll give you a sports game. Scout's Honor.
All right. So now, Eva, it is you and Andy trying to guess this game together as a team. I will be giving you the clues. Okay. When we say retro, we mean anything from the GameCube and backwards. So it's going to be a game that appeared on a Nintendo platform from the GameCube and backwards. I'm going to give you 10 clues one by one. You have 3 total guesses between the two of you to guess the game. If you don't guess it in three guesses, you lose the game. But you get points depending on how early you're able to guess. So if you guess it on one clue, you get 10 points. Second clue, you get 9 points, and so on and so forth. I wrote these clues down on my desk at work and then forgot them. So I had to try and remember what the clues were. So I did write them down. And Andy, each clue, yes, each clue is only going to be one word.
Oh, this is where you get me. Now, just so I can set Eva's mind at ease, yeah. Eva, the score is at this point, I am leading by 4 points. It's 4-0.
Right.
So even if we lose this week, I am still winning. So there's no pressure. There's no stakes here. Let's do our best. With Steven's, yeah, there is pride. That's always a factor.
No prize.
But yeah. You know what, Eva? This week, you have already made me a winner with Girth Castilla. Okay. So we're fine. We're totally fine.
Okay. Pride.
I love you too, buddy. All right. So one word clues, huh?
Yep.
That's how you're going to do me? That's how we're going to do this? Okay.
So Andy and me, we can talk.
We can have an open discussion. Okay. We can converse. Okay. We can sort of guess, see what's going on.
Try not to Google, because, you know, Andy's a big old cheater. All right.
Oh. I mean, you keep saying that, but, you know, that's just what you say.
Clue number one.
Make it true.
Clue number one for 10 points. Hearts. Hearts. H-E-A-R-T-S.
This could be a lot of games, Eva.
Hearts.
This could be a Zelda. This could be anything with a heart life meter. Oh, man. All right.
So now is it a bad moment to ask a question about the rules?
I think we wouldn't lose. I think it's still, that clue is too vague.
Yeah. No, but can I ask you something about the rules?
Oh, yes. Of course you can. Yeah.
It's all games that came out on the consoles or Nintendo.
So it could be on the Nintendo GameCube, N64, Game Boy, Super Nintendo, Nintendo. Okay.
But it doesn't have to be a Nintendo game.
It has to be a Nintendo. No.
But I mean,
yes, I know what you mean. Like, it could be a third-party game on the Nintendo system. Correct.
Okay. It could also be a multi-platform game that was on a Nintendo. But typically, when we do that, it's usually a unique to a Nintendo. Or like the clues will let you know that it's a multiplayer.
I really wish you would stick to that rule.
Yeah.
All right. So,
got it.
Some clarification. I think hearts is a great first clue, you fuckhead. But let's go on to the next one.
We'll take it into account.
Clue number two for 9 points.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chicken.
All right, Eva. I think he's trying to bait a Zelda trap in here. He has hearts. He has chicken. Two things that are very Zelda.
Yeah.
But I think he's laying a trap.
Chicken.
I think he's laying an obvious trap. But he wants me to think he's laying a trap when it's obviously a Zelda game. This is the fuckery that happens in the Retro Game Club. It's one big mind fuck.
Right?
At this part of the show.
Because the Zelda would be like an easy guess.
It would be, but there's so many Zelda games that came out. Which one is it?
We have to guess which one is specific.
Oh, yeah.
Well, listen. He wouldn't have clues that vague. At some point, we would know which Zelda game it is, if it is a Zelda game we're talking about here.
Uh-huh.
So I say hearts and chickens. Great. I have other things in my head that I'm thinking about. He said chicken. Chicken could also be an item for health that restores your hearts. Yeah. Not an actual physical chicken. It could be a cooked chicken.
Mm.
So a lot of things here to consider. So once again, you big piece of shit. Let's go to clue number three.
Yeah, that's
all right.
Idea.
Clue number three for 8 points.
Yes.
Yokoi.
Yes,
yes. Yokoi.
Yokoi. All right. Weird.
Why?
Yokoi. All right. It's
Google.
Japanese words.
I see the logo or the image.
Okay.
No Googling, right?
No Googling. Yokoi.
I said, oh, I'm so bad. It's a pity that I'm so bad with names. That's a pretty big one, right? That's a big, big clue.
Mm.
Right?
Or is it?
Oh, you cannot say yes or no, Stefan.
I mean, it could be a lot of things. Japanese could be a name, could be a part of the title, could be like a translation that was first there, then it came differently named here. Okay. Maybe we should go to the next clue.
Yeah. All right. Next clue for 7 points. Pocket. Pocket.
I'm thinking this is a Game Boy game. Pocket maybe speaks to portability or a handheld device. Hearts, chicken, Yokoi is still
a
mystery.
Not, it has nothing to do with the. What's the name of this thing? The animals that you have to feed and take care of. Well, not animals, the machines that you have to feed and take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
What's their name? I'm so bad.
All right, okay. Pocket, okay.
Yokoi,
yeah. All right, I think.
What's the name of the thing? Is this original animals that? Oh my god! What's the freaking name? you don't know which ones I'm referring to, Andrea.
Which one? Which ones?
The they were like eggs. They were, first off, they were like small eggs, but like plastic eggs.
Oh, the Tamagotchi?
Yeah, Tamagotchi.
Yeah, there you go.
And by the way, when you said my full name there, it was like my mom calling me. Oh. I was like, I don't know, Mom. I don't know what the answer is. Please love me.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I think you're thinking of that yokai game. That yokai series,
maybe.
But that's like it's kind of like Pokemon a little bit, but Yokoi is something else. Yeah. I don't think it's that. Okay. I'm really thinking this is something on the Game Boy. It said Pocket.
Yeah.
Game Boy. Okay.
But there were not so many games called Pocket.
Right, but that's he could be referring to Game Boy Pocket, for example. That was a thing. Okay. Let's have some more clues, please, yeah. Mr. Steven.
Okay.
Hearts, chicken, Yokoi, Pocket.
Clue number 5 for 6 points.
Ass clues.
Egypt. Egypt.
Eva, well, for fuck's sake.
No idea.
Wait a minute. I think Google search has come up with something. No. I have a guess. Egypt did it for you, I think. I'm going to wager a guess because I'm going in blind. Because Egypt, hearts, chicken kind of throws me off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Egypt could be the key here. Okay. Is this game for one guess?
Yeah. For five points.
Is this game Super Mario Land?
Super Mario Land. That's the guess you're going with.
Yes, because
I'm going to be that obvious.
There was an Egyptian thing to it. I think you had hearts in that game as life.
Well, yeah.
I don't know where the chicken fits in or Yokoi, but I'm thinking Pocket, I feel, is definitely a Game Boy reference. That was a Game Boy series, the Super Mario Land series. Mm-hmm. And there was a definite Egyptian theme to that game.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a Sphinx enemy on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So listen, at this point, I'm kind of, these one word clues are really killing me. Mm-hmm. So It's between 5 points and inevitable 0 points. So if I can maybe get okay. five, I'll
all right. with that. All right. So that's it. You're using that guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, yes, yes. You are correct.
Holy shit.
Oh my God. Wow.
Listen, wow. he got it when he Googled yokoi.
No, what are you talking? Dude, the Egypt got you. What the fuck is yokoi?
Yokoi.
What is yokoi?
He's the composer for the music. Chicken is one of the enemy types. Just chicken.
It's called chicken.
That's the name of the enemy. It just says chicken. Like when you do the credits and it tells you like all the enemies, one of them is chicken. hearts. The reason why there were hearts in the game is because the Game Boy only had four colors, so they could not distinguish between regular mushrooms and one-up mushrooms. So they changed the one-up mushroom to a heart. To give you your one up pocket, obviously, because of the Game Boy.
Egypt, look, it wasn't heart like I got it. Mm-hmm.
The Egypt was the there was the first level is an Egyptian themed level. The next clue would have been Super Ball, because you get a Super Ball instead of a Fireball when you get a Fire Flower.
That wouldn't have done it, because I would not have known that about the game.
Noko Bone. Do you know what a Noko Bone is?
The fuck's a Noko Bone? Is like
bone
a, is those
the
dry
Japanese,
bones?
Well, here's the thing: when they brought the game to America, they didn't change the name of the names of the enemies. So Noko Bone are the Koopa Troopas that explode; their shells explode. So they were called the Noko.
Whoa! Bone. Yeah. Is that ever in any other game?
No.
Okay. No. Interesting.
The next clue would have been submarine.
Yes, that would have been good, because that was also on the cover, him on the sub, right?
Indeed.
I believe.
Yep.
Okay.
And then the second to last clue would have been Sarasaland.
Which I won the levels, I imagine.
Sarasaland is the actual land that you are exploring.
Okay,
there's four levels on Sarasaland.
Right. Okay.
And then the final clue was Daisy.
Oh, okay. I think with the sub, I would have hit it for sure, but Egypt really, really did it for me.
Yeah, I was going to do something. I was going to pick one of the other levels, but I feel like Egypt could have been, like, the other levels were modeled after China, a forgotten city in the sea, which I forget, or Aruba, I think. And then the other one was Easter Island. It was, like, modeled after Easter Island. I feel like Easter Island would have been too on the nose. There are a lot of games that, you know, have Egyptian themes, so I thought maybe that would throw you off a little bit. But yeah.
I think it was the Pocket, which I think was the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. It put Game Boy in my head really fast. It was definitely a Game Boy game. Mm-hmm. And then Egypt, that was the first thing that I thought of immediately.
Do not tell him. Do not use Pocket as a clue. Got
it. That was just right. I recall that the box art very clearly. It has a Sphinx on it.
The reason why I picked the game is because the Video Game Historian just did a extended piece on Super Mario or of the Super Mario Land games, the three games on the Game Boy, and
nice.
I thought it was absolutely fascinating. So if you do not follow him on YouTube, the Video Game Historian, and his last video, or at least the last video I watched, I think it was this week's, was about Super Mario Land, and it was really, really fascinating. And that's it. Eva, you made it to the end of the show. Look
awesome.
At that. You did it.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a very nice time.
Indeed. All right, let's just wrap this thing up, and then we'll give you another chance to tell everybody where they could find you and all the games. So Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast is part of the Proving Gamer Podcast Network, which includes Trophy Whores, a PlayStation podcast, and Game Stuff, a general games discussion podcast. Lots of changes going on over at Proving Gamer. I was on this past week's... when did that go? Just this last episode of Trophy Whores, and they spoke a little bit about the changes coming to Proving Gamer. So check out that show if you want to know more about what's going on at Proving Gamer in the next couple of weeks or months. You could support Proving Gamer by going to provinggamer.com. And while there are no articles and there haven't been articles in a while, that's part of the changes that are coming soon. But you could still support them by going to the website and clicking on the Amazon affiliate advertising and doing your shopping like normal. you know, just gives them a little kickback so they could improve the site. If you want to follow the show, you could do so on social media. We are at NDS Podcast. I am at Batchild27. Andy is at Pants Guy, and you could join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NDS Podcast. And now, Eva, where can everybody find you and anything that you want to tell the fine listeners about?
I guess I would recommend to either follow us on Twitter, which is at Abilite, or the website where we have a blog, and there's a lot of information about all the games that we publish and develop, which is abilite.com. And we used to, well, we are on Facebook too, but you know, it doesn't, yeah, not anymore really. We don't update it that much, and it's not much sense there. We sure. do also have an Instagram, and it's Abilite Studios. And I would say that's about it. That's how you can find it. And our games are on, you know, the Switch, the 3DS. I forgot to tell you, totally recommended if you have a 3DS to get Chris Castilla, because it's a very, very special edition of the game.
Oh.
That it's, if you didn't know, I totally recommend it. You would be amazed at how the game plays and how it is presented. And it has some hidden eggs.
Easter eggs, yes.
Well, yeah, some surprises that are exclusive to the 3DS and will ever be exclusive to the 3DS. So you can check Curse Castilian 3DS Switch. And all the other platforms, really. But for the Nintendo platforms are way more special.
Ooh, look at that.
I like that.
Thank you very much, Eva, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure hanging out with you. You're a lot of fun.
Likewise.
Good spirit in the spirit of our insanity. Thank you to our contributors, Zazu Pitts of Sound Note Productions for our theme song. Thank you, Dan Clone of Dinosaur Machines for our logo. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for all of our art assets. Thank you again to our Patreon producers, Alex Gonzalez and Gavin Macron. Thank you very much again for supporting the show. Remember, you could support us just like our Patreon producers do at patreon.com/NDS podcast. And before we go, Andy, is there anything that you want to tell the kids?
Oh, yes. Please stay tuned for next week's show. We'll be having on James, I don't know his last name. Didn't give it to us. James something of a studio that brought us Rain World, where you play as a slug cat trying not to die. That's a cute little game. I'm looking forward to the conversation. Rain World, yes.
Yep. Awesome. That should be exciting. So yeah, that's it, folks. This has been Nintendo Dual Screens episode 84 for the week of February 4th. If you want to listen to this episode's pre- and post-show shenanigans, which Andy, you and I record each pre- and post-show every week, head over to patreon.com/NDS podcast, where you can get an extra hour of content every single week. Until next time, please take care, and as always, please be excellent to each other.